This is Akashvani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on important bills and the monsoon session of Parliament. The participants are Shekhar Iyer, political analyst, and Shubhamoy Bhattacharaji, economic analyst. Moderator is Aditi Tandon, senior journalist.
The monsoon session of Parliament, which commenced on the 21st of July, has been adjourned sine die on Thursday. It had 21 sittings that were spread over a period of 32 days. Through the session, basically 14 bills were introduced in Lok Sabha, 12 were passed by Lok Sabha and 15 were passed by Rajya Sabha. But if you look at the cumulative productivity of the houses, two houses, 15 bills were passed by both the houses of Parliament. So effectively passed totally and completely. Also, one bill was withdrawn in the Lok Sabha, which was the Income Tax Act. It was reintroduced and then passed by the Parliament. I'll come first to you, Shekhar ji, and let us talk about the most important bill that has captured the public attention, which was passed by the Parliament yesterday after the Rajya Sabha's approval, the Promotion and Regulation of Online Gaming Bill 2025, which basically seeks to promote and regulate online gaming sector, including the verticals of esports and online social games, and to completely ban what we know as basically online money games. How do you look at this particular bill, considering nearly 90% of the revenue of the gaming sector comes from real money games?
Thank you, Aditi. Indeed, this is very, very important legislation, not in just terms of regulating online games. But the fact that this has taken care of two aspects. One is to prohibit, online money games through computer resource, be it mobile device or the internet. This has become a serious problem for two reasons, because particularly the manner in which our young people were getting trapped by these fly-by-night operators who were operating several betting games. And a lot of money was being lost, and there were at least instances of 45 suicides by young people who lost a lot of money to these app-based games. So there was a rural distress in terms, particularly in states like Uttar Pradesh, in Punjab, in Haryana, Madhya Pradesh, and a lot of other states where many people thought this betting, participation in betting was some kind of an urban phenomenon, but it was not so. The feedback that was coming to the government was that, lured by advertisements, lured by promotion, and this was causing a lot of problems. And government that got inputs as to how people had ran into debts, because the amount of volume of money was something like 20,000 crores. So therefore, they had to act on this. This is one aspect which is there. And secondly, these online games, money games, were also being used for money laundering. So there was a security angle to this. So therefore, it was decided that these vulnerable population will have to be protected from, use of digital technologies to actually cheat them. And so this was one aspect. And as I mentioned, the security aspect was much more, because the number of financial institutions, non-banking institutions were also involved. So that raised the question as to, because some states have already got some regulation. So there was a need for a national level legal framework. And that is why this is a very important legislation. But unfortunately, we did not get to hear a good, healthy debate on this subject. So what we saw was because of constant disruption by the opposition members over an issue not exactly concerning the matters before Parliament. So anyway, the government went ahead and passed this legislation in both the houses.
The Promotion and Regulation of Online Gaming Bill will tackle money laundering, financial fraud, and will promote esports, says Ashwini Vaishnaw, the Minister for Information and Broadcasting and Electronics and Information Technology.
Online money games. ऑनलाइन मनी गेम्स के कारण लोगों में एडिक्शन हो रहा है. जगह जगह से इस तरह की खबरें आती हैं कि परिवार की बचत सारी की सारी गेमिंग के अंदर चली गई. कई जगह एक्सट्रीम केसेस है सुइसाइड के, और एक तरीके से ये गेमिंग डिसऑर्डर बन गया. करीब करीब सांसद गण जितने भी मुझे मिलते हैं, जनप्रतिनिधि मिलते हैं, उन सबकी एक डिमांड रहती है कि ऑनलाइन गेमिंग पर प्रतिबंध लगाया जाए, इस पे स्ट्रिक्ट कड़ी कार्रवाई की जाए. और उस हित को अगर एक इंडस्ट्री के सेगमेंट से कंपैरिजन करें तो समाज का हित, मध्यम वर्ग के परिवारों का हित, युवाओं का हित, वो बड़ा है. उसी भावना को लेके सदन में पेश किया गया और लोकसभा में पास किया गया.
So I just had one more question on this bill. How does the government basically reconcile the fact that right now online money games are the major revenue generators and are so also called the backbone of the gaming sector? And Indian Gaming Report 2025, if you see, has identified real money gaming as the engine of growth, contributing 86% to the industry revenue. And on the other hand, like you correctly said, that there is this whole kind of an epidemic, a mental health epidemic. You have addiction and compulsive behaviors because of online gaming. You have so many middle class families wrecked because of this debt trap. How will the government achieve this balance? Because government, after taking this very important step yesterday, stands to lose a lot of revenue.
Well, the government is thinking of regulating this whole sector by bringing in more e-sports, educational games and other social gaming without the aspect of betting. See, there is still scope for using the medium, for using the technology, to involve in people more in what I would call use of their brains, testing their abilities. Because one of the defense that is coming from the sector, which has been allowing the online betting, is that the government stands to lose in terms of revenue. And this could also leave a number of people involved in this sector, render them jobless. So the idea is to strike a balance and see that you can still have a lot of e-gaming, a lot of educational games, social games. You can have quizzes, which all could test, the participants' ability, rather than, having a betting. Betting is altogether a different game, because betting is supposed to be, involves a factor which cannot be quantified. And at the same time, it has given room for all these fly-by-night operators who have been sucking out money and they have been hooking young youth to it. And there has been a tendency of a kind of an addiction, where youths were betting from as low as 100 rupees or 500 rupees to bigger amounts, and then losing money steadily. So therefore, the government felt, since gambling itself is illegal, even to allow online betting is also some kind of a gambling. So they had to act in this manner, and the kind of reports that were coming, particularly, as I mentioned, the states like Uttar Pradesh, which was reporting the largest number of participants in this online betting. So therefore, the reports of rural wrestlers and families being reduced to total poverty because they were putting all their money, hard-earned money, whatever saved, in the hope that they could strike rich in this game.
Yeah, so what you're essentially saying is that the government has chosen to prioritize psychosocial health over money. So moving on from this bill, Shubhmoy, I'd like to bring you in on the Income Tax Act, the new act which replaces the 6-decade-old IT Act of 1961. Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman, while making an introduction of the new bill, which takes into consideration many recommendations that were made by the select committee that was formed, after the budget session of Parliament, said that the idea basically is to modernize the tax administration of the country. How will the new Income Tax Act, what will it change for a common man?
That's a good thing. A tax bill doesn't change life for the common man. That is actually the biggest signature for an Income Tax Act, because taxes should be predictable, taxes should apply consistently, and people shouldn't have to go around thinking, oh my God, what is the new change that has come? The very fact, as you rightly pointed out, Aditi, this is about administration, means that the back end of the tax system gets changed. There are quite a few changes that come in. Those change for the common man on the street. She or he has already got a benefit this year, for instance, from Nirmala Sitharaman's budget, of the income tax limit being raised up to rupees 12 lakh. And in fact, 12.75 lakh if you take the exemptions and everything included. So given that, people don't therefore have to be bothered that soon after, what is the new bill coming? What do I need to change? People don't need to change. And that is, I think, a very major message that should be there, that it is an act which actually reduces the cost of doing business. One of the major things that is that will be there will be that startups, which were not really defined, has now got a place in the bill. So lots of their taxation structure has been simplified. The number of provisions that guide the Income Tax Act have been reduced. Remember, this tax bill was something that has been thought through for several years, and it has gone through several iterations, and that was necessary because when you bring a change in the Income Tax Act, that affects more and more people. To just give an example, we have about 5 million people till a few years ago who are paying income tax, I mean, big and small and everything. Thanks to GST, the taxpayers' kitty has gone up to 15 million. Now, that's big. It's three times. Now, GST and income tax have got integrated. So whoever pays GST can also be looked at from the income tax point of view. In given that sort of a circumstance, given that lots of small and medium enterprises, small enterprises, and as I said, startups are now part of the income tax bracket, it's essential that the rules are simpler, clear, and essentially that Act moves in that direction to make it simpler for them to operate their business.
So for the record, like you said, that a lot of provisions have been simplified and cut. The original Income Tax Act had about 819 sections that have come down to 536 in the new bill. In the new bill, and chapters have been reduced from 47 to 23. So obviously, simplification of tax administration. The new Income Tax Bill 2025 aims at modernizing the country's tax framework and introduces a friendlier taxpayer infrastructure. Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman says,
for the first time in this act, we have brought 39 new tables and 40 new formulae to replace textual narration. So when people see numbers, when they see comparisons, or when they see it laid out in a simpler format, it is easy for them. So we've adopted this novel method in a law, in an act which is going to be passed by the parliament, which normally doesn't happen.
Shubma, just one more question, quick answer. Does it also mean that this particular bill will help the government expand the tax base of the country through simplification?
Yes, certainly. I mean, that is what you would expect, that when a new bill of this sort comes along, then what is it that you're trying to do? Well, you're essentially trying to say that, fine, you will have to pay income tax. All of us are now income tax pays. Whether they pay zero tax or whether they pay any tax, it essentially means everybody's an income tax filer. Given that sort of a situation, people need to have a very predictable, very clear and a responsive administration. And the Income Tax Act, the changes that have been made, for instance, clearing up the dense thicket of exemptions, which, you know, people would sort of wonder whether I can get this exemption or that exemption. Those have been cleared out. The very big change that has been made is in angel tax, as I said, for startups. Those have been cleared out. There have been changes also in the treatment of income from social media. Influencers, for instance, have been regarded as tax-paying entities for the first time. Now, that's significant because there are new types of jobs coming up, and the tax policy and the tax bill brings those new people into the ambit of the tax system.
Right. Shekhar Iyer, the National Sports Governance Bill, also a very significant bill whereby the government seeks to revolutionize and also regulate and streamline the sporting landscape of India. Sports Minister Mansukh Mandavia stresses the significance of the National Sports Governance Bill and the changes that it will introduce to the sporting landscape of the country.
देश में स्पोर्ट्स के लिए एक इकोसिस्टम तैयार हो उसके लिए खेलो इंडिया की मूवमेंट चालू करी फिट इंडिया की मूवमेंट चालू करी आज देश में 1000 से अधिक डिस्ट्रिक्ट लेवल पर एक डिस्ट्रिक्ट में एक से अधिक स्थानों पर खेलो इंडिया सेंटर खुला हुआ है वहां युवाओं को ट्रेनिंग मिल रही है एथलीट को ट्रेनिंग मिल रही है वैसे ही जो खिलाड़ी हमारे स्पोर्ट्स में अच्छा परफॉर्मेंस करता है उसके लिए खर्च की व्यवस्था करना उसके लिए अच्छी ट्रेनिंग मिले उसके लिए नेशनल इंटरनेशनल खेलने के लिए अपॉर्चुनिटी मिले उसको अच्छा कोच मिले उसको अच्छा एक्सपोजर मिले इसलिए टारगेटेड ओलंपिक्स पोडियम स्किल का भी व्यवस्था करी है ताकि हम अच्छे से अच्छे स्पोर्ट्समैन तैयार कर सके.
See, we are a very young country. Obviously, demographic dividend is there. But when we look at our sporting fraternity, we do not get too many medals. You know, we are gradually getting there, but we have a very long way to catch up. So the new bill provides for a national sports board, also provides for a national sports tribunal. What will it do?
Aditi, you have seen for the last few years, the functioning of some of our sporting bodies have come under scrutiny, particularly because of whether you call it politics or mismanagement, and also the role of people with the political background in running these organizations. With India bidding for Olympics sometime in 2035-36, so the whole idea was that we need to bring in more professional standard into the conduct of our various sporting bodies. So the whole idea is the objective of, you know, promoting sports should be accompanied by some kind of a standard for ethical practices. And that should also be reflected in good governance in the sporting bodies. Because frequently sporting bodies have been subjected to factional issues, factional problems. And as I mentioned, particularly the interest of people with political background in managing these institutions. So therefore, the whole idea, and this has even raised questions about affiliation with the India International Olympic Committee also. Therefore, the idea is that our bodies should be governed, whether in terms of their internal elections, internal managements, internal auditing, so that there is overall a sense of, you know, the universal principles of good governance, ethics and fair play. That reflects our, you know, the kind of sports activity in the country and the sports movement in the country. And in tune with the Olympic Charter and also as well as the Paralympic Charter. So therefore, the idea is to see that the international best practices and then legal standards, you know, the international legal standards, these are, you know, brought in the mechanism so that grievances of athletes, of players vis-a-vis the sporting bodies, these are addressed in the manner, in a very equitable and effective manner, because there has been too many issues we have seen which has brought these our sporting bodies under a kind of a limelight that doesn't do good for either the sports persons or for the promotion of sport to the country. Therefore, this sports governance bill will definitely bring in regular election to these bodies, better representation, and primary task of sporting talents, I mean, rather picking up talents and then giving them the necessary training and encouragement so that we are able to kind of achieve a performance in international competition in line with the kind of results we see with athletes from China, Russia, or Japan, or South Korea. I mean, these countries also have bodies. I mean, so the whole idea is to see how the best practices that are internationally followed are brought into this, our sporting organization, whether it is Basketball Federation, Football Federation, or the Control of Cricket in India. So all this, whole idea is that there is uniformity. At the same time, the level of professional involvement is of a higher order, Aditi.
Right. So basically, the National Sports Board and the National Sports Tribunal are the two main hallmarks of this new bill. The Sports Board will mean that all national sporting federations will have to get recognition from the NSP to get government funding. And the NSP will also have the power to de-recognize a national federation. Shubmai, one quick question. The National Sports Tribunal, you know, which has through this bill been given powers of a civil court to adjudicate matters. We all know that so many courts have so many disputes lingering for over decades. How does this help? How does this help the athletes of the country?
Yeah, in fact, when I was listening to Shekhar, he made a very important point that we don't win too many medals. Well, we don't win too many medals, but the number of court cases that we have, we are already about to create a record about sports. So definitely there was a room that there was a necessity to bring in a national sports tribunal, essentially because many of the cases that come along require specialized understanding. It doesn't help proper governance to have the clog the high court and supreme courts again. So sports could definitely do with a tribunal. Of course, there's an issue about definition of what constitutes a sporting issue that has been left to be decided. Maybe the courts, the tribunals themselves will sort of clarify what sort of a dispute becomes into it. Because, you know, disputes within the governing body may not necessarily come into the tribunal. Now, that's something that is to be seen through as to how it will be worked out. But individual grievances, lots of times sportspersons say, claim that they have not been selected on a basis of a fair trial. That's something that hurts at the very root of a sports selection. So definitely a sports tribunal is a welcome idea.
Right. And also, I think it'll be a good thing to have all sporting federations covered by the RTI if they are recognized by NSP, National Sports Board.
Yeah. See, the idea of having autonomous sports bodies came up as a result of the Olympic Charter of the 19th century. That, you know, sports organizations free of political, racial, economic power and others, free organizations which will promote sports and nothing else. What has happened is, as developing countries have expanded the remit of sports, and countries of Asia particularly, whether it's China, Japan, South Korea, India, even other countries, you'd find that it wasn't possible for them to develop an independent governance structure for sports, which was totally devoid of the national political scene. So there was a lot of meshing of, seepage from the political structure. Now, that's unavoidable, and the sports bill doesn't say that that will not happen. But what will happen is it provides a regular system of governance so that there is a chairperson, there's a governing board, there's a treasurer, the secretary general, the term of office. You know, all these have been made fairly uniform. So as a result, what happens is that whatever the sports federations do, they will be answerable. So essentially what this means is that a sport can have a particular federation. That federation will be responding to the national sports bodies of that particular thing. Now, whether that creates or whether that creates more pressure is doubt. I mean, that's something that we worked out. But it definitely does create a uniform system of administration, which is, I think, very necessary. Because if we are going to encourage sportspersons, then we could do with much less differences in terms of the way the national sports are being organized in different games. And I think that really helps. We can't have that we are going in for Olympics and two or three of our sports federations get banned. That's not a very welcome sight. So that's what the government is looking at.
But BCCI still remains out of the RTI ambit because apparently they don't take grants from the government.
Yeah, but the sports bill doesn't really say that whether they'll be in within or outside. It simply says the central government will have the right to decide which sports will come under it. So technically, BCCI could also be under this sort of a system. However, it's up to the wisdom of the central government to decide which sort of sports. Because remember, sports is a state subject. It's not a union subject. So what the government is doing, central government is doing, is essentially saying that the federations will be under a particular uniform structure. It's not saying that we will govern the sports federations.
Right. Just a related bill, the National Anti-Doping Amendment Bill, which basically addresses certain concerns that the World Anti-Doping Agency had raised with respect to earlier proposal of the 2022 Act, which had mentioned a National Board for Anti-Doping in Sports. And WADA had said that this could interfere with the National Anti-Doping Agency. So that particular thing has been reconciled. Coming to you, Shekhar Iyer, politically and from the public point of view, very important bills that were introduced by Union Home Minister Amit Shah in Lok Sabha, the Constitution 130th Amendment Bill and the related bills to make similar provisions in the UT assemblies and in the Jammu and Kashmir Assembly, which essentially says that if Prime Minister or Chief Ministers, Union or State Ministers have been in arrest or in detention for a consecutive period of 30 days, they would have to resign, vacate their office, unless they have secured bail. If they have secured bail, they can stay. If they have not secured bail for 30 days, they should either resign. If they don't resign, on the 31st day, they would be deemed to have resigned and vacated their office. Union Home Minister Amit Shah, while introducing the Constitution 130th Amendment Bill, the Government of UT's Amendment Bill 2025, and the Jammu and Kashmir Reorganization Amendment Bill 2025, said,
माननीय अध्यक्ष जी, मैं प्रस्ताव करता हूं कि भारत के संविधान का संशोधन करने वाला विधेयक संघ राज्य क्षेत्र शासन अधिनियम 1963 का संशोधन करने वाला विधेयक तथा जम्मू कश्मीर पुनर्गठन अधिनियम 2019 का संशोधन करने वाले विधेयकों को माननीय अध्यक्ष जी द्वारा नाम निर्दिष्ट किए जाने वाले इस सभा के 21 सदस्य और माननीय उपसभापति द्वारा नाम निर्दिष्ट किए जाने वाले राज्यसभा के 10 सदस्यों को मिलकर बनने वाली संयुक्त समिति को सौंपा जाए.
How important do you see are these bills, because these were introduced by Amit Shah as landmark bills aiming to achieve probity in public life?
Aditi, you know, these bills are to send out a message that people holding high offices, constitutional posts, will have to set an example by way of establishing political morality. See, earlier it was never, because, see, you take, there were instances in the last few years. See, one thing that has not been understood or this provision, these bills also say that once you get a bail, there is no bar on your returning to those posts. The idea is within 30 days, you do not get bail either in the lower court or in high court or Supreme Court. On the 31st day, if you do not resign on your own, the president or the governor or the lieutenant governor, as the case may be, they can issue an order saying that you are no more in the office. And also, this is a constitution amendment bill. Aditi, we need to understand, this is a constitution amendment bill. It required 2/3 of people to be present and voting. At the moment, the government does not enjoy 2/3 majority in the Rajya Sabha or Lok Sabha. But yet, it wanted to send out a message that this legislation has to be considered by all parties. It is not a question of whether government has a two-third majority or not, but all opposition parties, as well as the ruling coalition, must, you know, send out a message that when it comes to probity, when it comes to upholding standards, we need to emphasize the morality of the issue. But unfortunately, the way the debate has taken, that this is only targeting opposition government, this is going to target governments in Bengal or Tamil Nadu or Kerala because elections are happening. Now, first, the legislation will have to be passed. But what about the bigger message? Because bigger question I would like to ask is it the only the concern of the government or the ruling coalition? Do the opposition parties do not share this concern? If they do, then why do they override their fear that this whole thing is against them? This is something, you know, because I have seen the debate that has been going on after this legislations have been introduced. Because the objection was at the introductory stage itself. And after all, it is such an important constitution bill. It's not going to be passed overnight.
See, and there are
numbers is an issue.
Yeah, you said that numbers are an issue. Moreover, the bill has been sent to the Joint Committee of Parliament, 21 members of Lok Sabha and 10 of Rajya Sabha, and they will deeply scrutinize the provisions. Also, one quick mention that opposition leaders have in fact resigned when arrested. For instance, we have a very recent example in Jharkhand where Hemant Soren had resigned as Chief Minister when he was arrested, and he allowed Champai Soren to come in. He came back and he won the mandate. So that argument of political vendetta, at least in this particular case, did not stand. Shubma, I want to bring you in. Public servants, if they are charged or arrested or detained, they have to vacate office within 48 hours. That is the central service rule that applies to them. Today, Prime Minister in Bihar has made a mention of this, that if public servants have to resign, why should the political class seek immunity for itself?
Yeah, Aditi, I mean, the issue that comes along is that whether political executives, whether they are public servant in the definition that is also applied for central government or government employees. So there is, there have been issues there. The big question that comes along is that, it is definitely something on which there's a time and necessity for a debate. And we'll have to look at it very carefully and very fast. That is something that we'll be needing to look at very carefully, but it's an interesting, very interesting area of debate that has been turned up.
Right. Also, five bills related to the Ministry of Ports, Shipping and Waterways have been passed. Shipping and Ports Minister Sarbanand Sonowal, while speaking on the Merchant Shipping Bill 2025, also highlighted the importance of this particular draft legislation and how it will change the waterways and inland waterways trade sector in India.
Therefore, enablement of increasing India's bankability in maritime sector is the core focus of this bill. The welfare and well-being of seafarers and the safety and security of ship, which minimize disruptions of the marine environment, are the two most prominent areas in the regulatory framework for maritime sector. The bill puts greater focus on ensuring safety in navigation and safety of life, protection of marine environment, emergency preparedness and response to marine incident.
Quick comment from you, Shubmoy. The Merchant Shipping Bill, for instance, does what?
One of the things that it does is that the port sector in India is ripe for investment. The Merchant Shipping Bill basically creates a very clear mandate for what are the rights of the ship builders, the ship owners. We are talking about in expanding the shipping sector in India. But for the first thing that they'll need is clarity in terms of when they bring in investment, how will the money will be protected and what are the and how they can invest in. The Merchant Shipping Bill was something that was therefore very necessary. It creates arbitrational avenues. It creates clarity in terms of how these companies can put their money in. The Merchant Shipping Bill also encourages, one of the things that it does is that it promotes the use of Indian flag. So there are lots of those issues that comes in.
Thank you so much, Shubma. Thank you, Shekhar Iyer.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on important bills at the monsoon session of Parliament. The participants were Shekhar Iyer, political analyst, and Shubhamoy Bhattacharyaji, economic analyst. Moderator was Aditi Tandon, senior journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.